You're listening to the Kingdom Reformation Podcast with Glenn Bleakney, equipping the church for revival, reformation, and kingdom impact worldwide.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at what you might call a philosophical and an operational overhaul, all based on a single powerful teaching. Mm-hmm. We're diving into the kingdom mandate. And we're drawing heavily from the work of Glenn Blakeney at Awake Nations.
And this one really requires us to challenge some very fundamental assumptions about what faith is for.
Yeah.
We're sort of shifting from this idea of passive waiting.
Yeah.
And stepping right into a mandate for global transformation.
Let me just open with this analogy that frames the entire teaching. It's pretty powerful. Imagine you have a treasure map.
Okay.
It's perfectly clear. It shows the path to, untold riches. But instead of following the path, you get completely obsessed with the warnings scribbled in the margins.
The fine print. Yeah. Beware of bandits. Watch for bad weather.
Exactly. You spend all your time becoming an expert on all the things that could go wrong. You know every risk. You've studied every potential failure point.
But because you're so focused on the margins, you never actually take a single step down the path. You never go for the prize.
And the first we're looking at argues that's a perfect picture of how much of Christianity has approached Matthew chapter 24.
Hmm.
We've become specialists in tribulation charts. We're scanning the news for wars, for earthquakes, obsessing over the signs.
You're completely missing the central instruction, the actual command.
So what's the shocking claim here? What's the thesis?
The big claim is that the real sign of the end isn't something we passively watch for. It's active work. It's purposeful labor. The responsibility for the clock running out is put squarely on us, the participants.
Wow.
It's on us to complete the mission, not on the world to just collapse on its own.
That is a staggering implication. Okay, let's set the scene. Let's go back to the source text, Matthew 24. Jesus has just walked out of the temple.
Right.
And he's just predicted its total destruction. He says not one stone will be left upon another. So the disciples, who are obviously shaken up, pull him aside.
And they ask the pivotal question.
What will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?
And to really get their panic, you have to get their worldview. They didn't think in a single straight timeline like we tend to. Their whole world was framed by a two-age model.
This is the Olam Haza and the Olam Haba.
Exactly. The Olam Haza was this present age, the one filled with sin, suffering, corruption. And the Olam Haba was the age to come.
The Messiah's reign, restoration, peace.
Yes. So when they asked about the end of the age, they were asking when that clean break was coming. When does age one stop and age two just instantly begin?
But Jesus doesn't give them that clean break, does he? The source says he actually shifts their whole timeline.
He completely revolutionizes their eschatology. He starts demonstrating that the kingdom isn't just a future thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's breaking into the present age now. When he casts out a demon, he says, "The kingdom of God has come upon you."
So we're living in an overlap.
The great overlap. That's the perfect way to put it. We're in this tension between D-Day the cross, when victory was secured, and V-Day, when the king returns to make that victory final and visible. The kingdom is already here, but not yet fully.
And that overlap makes the next verse, he says, Matthew 24:14, so critical. He connects the timing of the end directly to our work.
Yes.
He says, "This gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come."
And that word then, that sets the condition. It's the central revelation here. The end is literally waiting on the successful demonstration of the kingdom message.
Let's talk about that word testimony, because a lot of people hear preached and just think, reciting facts.
Right, giving a speech. But the Greek word here is martyrian.
Where we get our word martyr.
Exactly. But in a legal context, it means evidence, proof, a compelling witness. It's not just talking about the kingdom. It's providing visible, undeniable evidence of its reality and its power.
So the clock is waiting for the church to actually demonstrate the kingdom.
To manifest it in a way that serves as proof to the nations.
Okay, so that means we have to know what this kingdom is we're supposed to be demonstrating. The teaching goes way back for this, doesn't it, to Matthew 25.
They don't.
It cites Matthew 25:34, which says, "The kingdom was prepared before the foundation of the world."
Which is a huge chronological point.
It's critical. If the kingdom was planned before the fall, before sin, before there was even a need for a temple, then the kingdom was always plan A. It was the original intent.
Not just a reaction to our failure.
Never a reaction. And if the kingdom is plan A, that reframes everything else. The law, the temple, the church itself, they're all means to an end.
They're vehicles.
They are vehicles. The kingdom is the destination. And if we confuse the vehicle, like, say, running the church building with the destination, we sideline the actual mission. We get really good at maintenance instead of mission.
And the source says that original mission is spelled out right at the beginning in Genesis 1, the first commission.
The charter for humanity. It's got four parts. Okay, let's break down that four-part blueprint. Number one is be fruitful.
Which means to reproduce the image of God. To raise up sons and daughters who reflect his character, his nature.
Then multiply.
That's the exponential piece.
Yeah.
Discipleship. Extending that image so that you're creating more kingdom citizens.
Third, fill the earth.
Spread his presence, his culture, his atmosphere everywhere. Turn the whole planet into a garden.
And finally, number four, have dominion.
This is the Hebrew word rada. And it's so often misinterpreted as, you know, domination or ruthless control.
Right.
But biblical dominion is about governance. It's stewardship. It's bringing heaven's order and justice and life into the earthly realm, like a wise king, not a tyrant. Right. And that assignment is still active.
But something obviously went wrong. That ability to fulfill the mandate was shattered. What exactly did we lose in the fall?
The teaching points to three profound losses. First, we lost the glory, that visible, empowering presence of God. We fell short of it.
And second, the proper divine image. The source has a great line here. It says, the mirror cracked.
It's a perfect description. We were still image bearers, but the reflection was distorted. We couldn't accurately represent the king anymore.
And the third loss?
Legal authority. By giving in, Adam effectively ceded authority. Satan legally became what the Bible calls the God of this world. Humanity lost the title deed.
And that led to shame, hiding, a cursed environment, a total failure to rule.
But, and this is the beautiful part, sin only interrupted the process. It never changed God's destination. He immediately promised redemption right there in Genesis 3.15.
Which sets the stage for Jesus, the last Adam, the ultimate restorer.
And he didn't just come to forgive sins, as crucial as that is. He came to restore the total capacity that the first Adam lost.
So he restores those elements we lost.
All four. He restores the image in us. He restores the glory, promising to share his glory with us. And crucially, he restores the authority.
All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me, therefore, go.
Exactly. And because he restored the authority, he could then restate the assignment. The Great Commission in Matthew 28 isn't new. It's the Genesis 1 mandate, just repeated and supercharged with resurrection power.
Wow, look at that parallel. Go into all the world.
Fill the earth.
Make disciples.
Be fruitful.
Baptize.
Multiply.
Teach them to obey everything I command.
Have dominion. The original assignment is fully back online. We're being restored to operate in that Genesis 1 capacity right now.
This forces a really tough question on us then. What gospel are we actually carrying? What message are we living out?
Yes, the source presents a very stark contrast here. On one side, you have what it calls the religious gospel. This leads to consumer Christianity.
So that's the message that's very individualistic. Accept Jesus into your heart. Get your ticket to heaven.
Right. It's transactional. It reduces the gospel to a personal benefit and a club membership. It creates consumers of faith who come to receive,
but aren't necessarily trained to go and transform.
Whereas the gospel of the kingdom is a royal commission. It's not about what you get. It's about who you serve. It demands total allegiance. Jesus is Lord.
And it produces disciples, not consumers.
Exactly. Its focus is on heaven invading earth now. It's a partnership with God as kings and priests to exercise dominion. It's costly. It demands everything.
Yeah.
But it also delivers the fullness of God and the authority we need to get the job done.
This also means we have to completely expand our definition of salvation. The Greek word soteria.
Mm.
Most of us hear that and just think, I'm forgiven and I'm not going to hell. Fire insurance.
And it is that.
Yeah.
But it's so much more. Soteria is comprehensive. It means deliverance, rescue, preservation, healing, wholeness.
Mm.
And it's for now in this life, in the overlap.
The teaching actually breaks it down into four categories of enemies that this comprehensive salvation or sozo frees us from.
Well, let's hit them. First, of course, is salvation from sin and separation. That's the classic one. The penalty, power, and eventual presence of sin.
Okay, second.
Sickness and suffering. Physical healing is part of salvation. When Jesus healed the woman with the issue of blood, he said, your faith has saved sozo.
The saving and the healing were the same act.
One and the same. Third is Satan and spirits. Deliverance from demonic oppression is an act of sozo.
And the fourth one is huge for this mandate, salvation from systems and society.
Yes. This is being saved from the course of this world, from systemic evil, injustice, cultural corruption. When Peter preached in Acts, he told the people to be saved from this perverse generation.
He wasn't just talking about individual sins.
No, he was talking about the whole corrupt system they were in. A kingdom citizen's salvation has to impact education, business, the arts, every system we touch.
This completely redefines our metrics for success, doesn't it? We can't keep asking the wrong questions.
Exactly. The religious model asks, how many people can we get in the building? Success is attendance, budgets, the size of the campus. But the gathering is the vehicle, not the destination.
So if our only metric is Sunday morning attendance, we have completely missed the mandate.
Completely.
So what's the right question? What's the right metric for the kingdom mandate?
The first right question is, how much of God can we get in the people? It's a question of depth, of transformation. Are they being filled with the fullness of God?
And the follow-up has to be, how much of that fullness can we then release into the earth?
Now you're talking about impact. Now you're talking about being a kingdom ambassador.
And what defines an ambassador in this model?
Three things. They carry his fullness, they walk in his authority, and they operate in his power. And the word for power here is dunamis.
Right, dunamis. That's not just normal strength, is it?
No, dunamis is inherent, miraculous, explosive power. It's the power that changes reality. It's the dynamic energy you need to heal the sick, cast out demons, and transform systems. An ambassador has to have access to that.
Because an ambassador doesn't escape culture, they transform it. They don't hide, they invade. They don't pray for rescue.
They bring restoration. We're living embassies, as Paul said.
And this leads right to the strategy Jesus laid out. When he commissioned his disciples, he used the word apostolos.
A very intentional choice. In the Roman world, an apostolos wasn't just a messenger. It was a high-level commissioned representative of Caesar.
Sent with the full authority of the emperor.
Full authority. To go into new territory and establish Roman culture, Roman law, Roman peace. Jesus was commissioning authorized agents to invade, occupy, and transform territory for the kingdom of heaven.
So the goal isn't setting up a little Christian refuge.
The goal is to saturate the territory so completely with kingdom culture that when the king returns, he finds his culture already there. He feels at home.
And the strategy for that advance is three phases.
Just like any successful force taking ground, phase one is invade. That's the breakthrough. Your workplace, your neighborhood, your school, that's your mission field to be invaded with the presence you carry.
Then phase two, Aussie Yucupai.
You don't just visit, you stay. You establish a beachhead. You become a consistent long-term presence of transformation.
And the final goal, phase three, is transform.
This is when the atmosphere, the people, the very structures of a city begin to shift. Think of Joseph in Egypt or Daniel in Babylon. They didn't just survive there. They transformed the governing systems of pagan empires.
Which brings the whole mandate to its conclusion. It's a twofold mission then.
It is. Fill the people with the fullness of God.
And then through them, fill the earth with his glory. As Habakkuk 2.14 says, the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea.
We have to move beyond just rescuing souls for heaven. We're restoring people to their Genesis 1 purpose, training them to be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, and have dominion.
Which brings us right back where we started, Matthew 24.14. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony, and then the end will come.
We're the active participants. Jesus is waiting on us.
So let's go back to that treasure map.
The warnings in the margins, the opposition, the spiritual warfare, the difficulties, they're real. But they were put there to prepare us, not to paralyze us.
To make us aware of the fight, not to make us quit the journey.
Exactly. The real treasure isn't some prize we get after the world ends. The treasure is the mandate itself. It's participating with God in the restoration of all things right now.
So the choice is pretty clear. Stop studying the margins, follow the map.
And ask yourself, what territory will you invade with the culture of the kingdom?